The Bizarre Cast contains adult themes and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another captivating episode of The Bizarre Cast. Joining me today, we have Keith O'Donovan, professional content creator. We can say that officially.
And maybe, yeah.
And a great old friend of mine, and he's rejoining me after 4 years. We were just discussing before in the green room. Mm-hmm. And this marks we're crawling ever closer to episode 100 officially. So I think this marks 92. So we'll have episode 100 in the next probably 5 years at the current rate of release. But Keith, welcome back to the Bizarre. I hope you're cozy on the boxes in the stockroom.
Yeah, thank you for having me back, Richard. 4 years in the making, the famous return. I'm excited to be here. I'm looking forward to having a chat with you and catching up, reminiscing and seeing what's going on for the day.
Exactly. So there's been lots happening in the last 4 years. So I guess for those who haven't heard you before, new and old fans alike, would you like to give a little bit of introduction?
Sure. So at present, I'm basically kind of doing the full-time content creation gig, as you said, you know, just scraping by. So I'm a Twitch streamer. So I stream on Twitch like Mondays to Thursdays, kind of 5 hour streams every day under Steamy Streamers. And also I've just recently started up a podcast, the Press Any Button to Continue podcast, which kind of delves into retro gaming, nostalgia, you know, all our memories kind of tied with those different aspects. So kind of between, you know, kind of the high energy entertainments on Twitch, we play a bit of guitar, we do a bit of karaoke, the game sometimes becomes a bit secondary, but it kind of all about the entertainment aspect. And I come from a background of therapy, so I work as a therapist as well a little bit on the side. And I try and, you know, kind of amalgamate that into the stream too. And sometimes we have nice kind of chats as well, you know, about mental health too. So yeah, it's kind of a combination of all those things right now, you know, to pay the rent and bills and get by.
Exactly. That's what it's all about. Putting bread on the table to live another day, to put more bread on the table.
Yeah, literally bread, you know, no butter, nothing else, just the bread. I eat the heels too.
Yeah, with the current state of the world economy, thanks to Joe Biden's trillions of free money, but that's a podcast for another day.
Sure.
So the new podcast, Press Any Button to Continue, you do have a co-host with that, so it isn't just yourself. What's the focus of the podcast?
Yeah, so myself and Nisha, he's known as Retro Gamer Ireland on Instagram and a couple of different other socials. So the idea there kind of came from, I suppose, he was actually just putting up a story and he was like, oh, is there any good retro gaming podcasts to listen to? And he was just trying to get, you know, get a feel for what was out there. And I suppose he kind of found one or two, but was struggling to kind of, you know, find a lot of content on it. So when I saw that, I just sent a message. I was like, you know, we've known each other for years over Instagram, but we never really, you know, spoke one to one. We never really had a proper conversation. But I was like, do you know what? I was like, why don't we do one? Do you know what I mean? Why don't we kind of take up the mantle? And if there's a bit of a niche there and there's a hole in the market for that.
A bit of a niche there.
A bit of an Isha. Oh, I like it. We got to use that. So we were like, we would start off and, you know, we've only done an episode so far, but we got kind of great feedback on it. We went in, with the idea of recording where if we like it, we'll use it. We wanted it to be very much so like a chat between two friends. Do you know what I mean? Even though it was our first time kind of talking, you know, we all had, you know, memories growing up playing video games. You know, for a lot of people, a lot of their early memories playing them are very sentimental to them.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of kind of funny stories around them. Yeah. Do you know? And like, you know, we used to play games all the time together. We used to come over to my house, you know, every weekend. And we like, there's a lot of games I have on my shelf that, you know, have that attachment to them. Do you know, like a teddy growing up kind of thing, do you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, that game is kind of, you know, attached to your emotions with it. So, you know, we kind of take a deep dive into that type of nostalgia. And we hope that by unlocking a key in our heads, when we're having a conversation about, you know, getting the wrong game at Christmas, or do you know what I mean? Ruining your Pokemon cards, or, you know, particularly if you're a collector, do you know all the things you had as a kid and you're like, why did I cut them up? What was I doing? You know, those kind of funny times, those nostalgic times, those sentimental times, and hopefully as I said, unlock a key in other people's brains when they're listening to the conversation. And hopefully they feel like a third person there that, you know, then they can share their stories with us. So it's really kind of about bringing back that warm, fuzzy feeling. And that's kind of the aim of it. And we're kind of hoping to continue along that vein.
Yeah, well, having listened to it myself, I was not aware that it was your first time chatting to Nisha. It came across, as you said, like two old friends chatting, which is kind of a testament to how people really hold dearly old games and gaming memories. And I think a lot of people probably on the internet nowadays who are, you know, really into it and actually would be playing games would have strong affinities. And for those who haven't listened yet, we won't spoil it too much, but you sort of were mentioning where your own personal cutoffs for retro would be. But,
sure,
you know, that would be defined as anything that's between like 20, but not 40 years old into the past. So that window is forever moving for all the new kids on the block coming up. They're going to be really nostalgic about, you know, Call of Duty 17. They're going to say it was amazing.
Sure.
Or Fortnite. How do you sort of reconcile, you know, harboring the wall around your retro to actually kind of open the gate, so to speak, that you're not gatekeeping like a certain nostalgia range?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, this was part of the discussions, you know, like, and we're not specifically, like, you know, we're not going to not talk about modern games as a comparison. And we said it ourselves, it's not that we don't play them, we love gaming of all aspects, but, you know, obviously there's the emotional ties to the older stuff of when you're growing up. In terms of the actual category of retro itself, it's funny you say that, because I heard an interview with someone and they were saying, like, oh, I missed the good old night of Fortnite season one. Do you know, like, they were reminiscing on that.
Yeah.
As if it was, you know, their nostalgia. And, you know, as I said, without going too much details into what we said and repeating stuff, you know, there was an idea that retro is something that, you know, once the console has been discontinued, it's retro. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For other people, retro is an aesthetic. Do you know what I mean? And for other people, they see vintage as something that's tied to time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's kind of interesting comparisons between the two of them. But I think for me, like, I think it's a perspective thing. Like, if you have a 15-year-old who's looking at an Xbox 360, you know, they're going to think, as I said, you know, that's ancient. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That has to be. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, I it's like definitely not gatekeeping it. You know, it's interesting to have the conversation because people feel very strongly about it. You know, people are like, not the Nintendo 64 is the cutoff point, and you're like, that's the, you know, that's where I'm standing on. But I think it's what, like, you know, I think if, as long as it's not like readily buyable anymore, I think it's fine to consider retro. Do you know what I mean? I think as long as it's something, in my head, I used to think growing up, and I don't know about you, but I used to think like two console generations back, I would nearly consider it. Because when we were playing, you know, you and me were growing up and we were primarily playing Nintendo 64. Like, I remember going to your birthday.
Yeah.
You were 8 years old. It was your 8th birthday party.
Yes,
and you had the N64 and you had Ocarina of Time. Yeah, yeah. So I think it was one of the first times I was over to your house. And I was like, I was looking at that. I think I had a PS1 because I think that was my first console. And I think my sister had an N64. But I remember being at your house. I don't think we knew each other that well yet. I think it was almost one of those invites of like, yeah, we'll bring Keith along. We were kind of just getting to know each other, do you know? And that's, what, 22 years ago? Were you 7 or 8? 8?
I got the Nintendo for this. I was 7 that Christmas. So it was 8th birthday was the Ocarina.
Okay.
Which is crazy because if you think about it, that was 2000. And then the GameCube only came out a year later, but it felt that year was like the longest year ever of playing Nintendo 64. But it's actually such a short time that we waited like 10 years from like 360 to Xbox One or whatever.
But I remember looking in gaming magazines about the GameCube, like fucking, you know, getting really hyped about it. And actually, the GameCube is one of the interesting ones because I think aesthetically the GameCube held up really, really well. I think you could nearly, outside the handle, like, you know, that like very like just boxy design is very much so back in like the Series X kind of looks like a, you know, the GameCube just looks like a smaller Series X really.
Yes.
In terms of its shape. But yeah, so no, going back to that, like, so I remember, and that year you said, I think the interesting thing about that as well is, you know, when you're 8 years old, like, you know, a year is 1/8 of your life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so like that concept of time seems forever. We're now a year, like you blink and it's gone. But yeah, so I remember that being like some of the earliest memories. And, you know, when we were kind of hanging out a lot then, from, you know, that kind of age of probably 8 to kind of 14 or 15, you know, where we would have been constantly.
Which again, that's doubling your life that short time as well, like 6-7 years.
Sure.
You've doubled your life.
Sure.
It's crazy.
And, you know, I think we were kind of later bloomers to the to go into the discos and world. So I think still, we held on.
Still in the chrysalis.
Yeah, still avoiding the real world through
games.
That's
why it's called a podcast. We're still in the pod waiting to blossom.
Yeah, we're waiting to get flap our wings and
we need to start a butterfly cast now is the next one.
But so, you know, during that period of time, like I think when we were playing the PS2, we would have said the Super Nintendo was retro, and that or the PS1, you know, and that was just a console generation.
It was only
behind
three
the
or four years before,
right?
Before that. Yeah. Because then there was the NES before that in the same decade.
Because
you know?
There was even some Super Nintendo games that were coming out at the same time as the N64. Yeah. You know, there was still some late ones coming in. So I think it's all perspective. I think for some people it's emotionally tied. I think for some people, like collectors, they go very analytical on it of where they are. And then some people are saying, you know, but what about what you think? What's your opinion on it?
My opinion, and this will tie into a question I want to explore a bit more after this. I think retro is basically like there is a period of time between the ages of like 6 to 16 where whatever you play in that is going to like be your core memories forever. Because I have the new Xbox and I'm still playing, you know, Halo from 20 years ago. I've restarted Resident Evil 4 for like the fifth time since, you know, 17 years. And it's personally like hard for me mentally to like break the mold to play something new, even though objectively speaking, we're in like the best time ever for games because you have everything that came before. You have everything that's coming out now. It's no longer like a fighting genre, RPG, first person shooter. Like everything's a blend. Everything's amazing. If you're into puzzles with, you know, first person shooter elements, there's probably something there. You know, there's everything. And I would kind of broader ask the question because we're just saying beforehand and to tie in with the counseling and everything. Unfortunately speaking, and I think the last 2 years has like really exacerbated this for people, but mental health seems to be like declining in a really noticeable way. I've definitely seen it myself amongst just people on the internet, across like various discords and stuff I'm involved with, just people that I know personally all across the world. They're having a really bad go of it. But you were saying with like nostalgia, like you actually like going back and reliving these memories, and
it's your comfort blanket.
But yeah, that's what I was going to say. So it's you would see that as like a comfort blanket and you enjoy it, but you can almost like come back out of it, we'll say. But do you think some people would, they're using sort of nostalgia and the comfort blanket is like a real, I would say like possibly a toxic crutch. And I'm saying it from myself I find it very tough to play new things when I want to, but it's like you go back to what you know sort of thing.
To make it like relatable to everyone, I think you can also do the same with TV. So like a lot of people will watch their old favorite TV shows because they know them well. They know the storyline. Yes, like they know what's going to happen. It's anxiety free. Do you know what I mean? So like there's no surprises in it. And I think there's a mix between, I think gaming probably takes a little extra level of it. I feel like for me, I don't particularly remember, like you can remember movies fondly and have a nostalgia for them, but I don't quite tie them in with memories because often when you're playing a game, you've been playing it for like, you know, like we could have been playing Mario 64 for a whole year. Do you know what I mean? So like there's a far longer investment period of time.
And you're doing
certain
things.
Because you're the one controlling.
You share the memory.
Yeah, because you're controlling.
Yeah.
Of course. And because you're controlling the game, you know, a movie's on rails. So you're actively a part of the experience and you're actively sharing the secrets and the rumors with friends. So I think it even gives more of a time capsule of a place, you know, where you were in your life, where there was no probably responsibilities, you know, it was an escapism. As a kid, it's not an escapism. It's more filling your time. As an adult, it becomes more of an escapism because, you know, we all have more responsibilities and things to do every day that we got to keep up with. But I think to like answer the question, do people like, you know, are you kind of asking, are people like, you know, seeking out that type of comfort blanket of nostalgia and safety to avoid rather than visit?
It's almost just to kind of add on to the question and the point to maybe just give you some fuel for thought is, you know, like the likes of Disney now, like they're pumping out Star Wars prequel shows like no one's business. They're doing Marvel shows. Like,
sure.
It's
the new ideas.
It's almost like we've like grown up now, our generation are going to start having kids, but like Pokemon is still there. So it's like the prime example actually would be like the Buzz Lightyear movie. It's like for new kids, get their parents who watch Toy Story to come in. And this is, I think,
they're bridging the link.
This is like the first generation, I think, ever where there's like literally the Marvel Cinematic Universe is like older than, you know, it's like 15 years old now or something, where it's like,
and the people watching
and
it,
the people watching it started when they were 15 and now they're 30 and they're like, oh wow, like I'm having kids, like I'll bring them in. And I know Disney have always done that, but it seems like way more like cohesive now, and it's like the treadmill is finally there for like content just to like really pump the member berries of just like, you know, I think it's gotten to the point now where people are just losing.
I mean, you see, because it's interesting, right? Because this is like a very, very tough topic to grapple, if you know what I mean. Because the way you can look at it in a couple of ways. One, like, you know, we were in the in-between section of technology. So when we were growing up, we had internet, but we didn't have a lot of it. We had, you know, phones, but they weren't that smart. Do you know what I mean? So like, do you know the way people often talk about it? It's like, oh, back in my day, do you know, we went out and played with sticks and we, you know, that was kind of the thing. And if you saw a movie in the cinema, that might happen very rarely. But now the fact that like, you know, and this could be a huge contributor to mental health decline, like I believe it. Like I can feel myself sitting on bed, right? And I can be on TikTok and I can feel my brain rotting. Do you know what I mean? I can genuinely feel that, like, you know. And I'm trying to stay on topic because there's so much, you know, within that. But there is the fact that, as you said, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you're saying it's 15 years old. Do you know, if someone had a kid during the first Iron Man movie, they're 15 now. Is that right? Is Iron Man 15 years old? Is that what you're saying?
Ballpark, yeah. I think 2009 or something.
Ballpark?
Yeah.
So do you know what I mean? And they're kind of starting on that. So like now they're, you know, it's almost like... it's almost like building an army. Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, you know, we're going to keep releasing it and getting it in there. But I mean, look, I don't know. I'm kind of deviating from what we're talking
for
about.
Those listening who are screaming at their phone. 2008.
Yeah, yeah. It's 2008. Okay. So it's like, you know, so yeah, nearly. What is it? 14. So yeah, I do think there's this idea as well. And like, if look at the new consoles, look at the new Xbox. I mean, you know, the part I love about that the most is the backwards compatibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know,
yeah.
Like it's the you know, the upscale to 4K and they do the extra frames and it's like revisiting those games become amazing. I do think though clearly more than ever, and it's got to be, I mean, businesses know what they're doing. Disney knows how to make money. If re-releasing or rebooting or reimagining the same series we've had for the last 40 years is making money, then clearly we're probably in a state more so than ever within a world that we're like really looking to try and get comfort from things we already know, rather than maybe because the world is in such a, you know, a state after, and I don't want to go too much into this, but after COVID, you know, if you're in Ireland, there's a housing crisis, there's multiple of other things that people, businesses probably, you know, entertainment know this, and they're, you know, people are running back to what they know rather than wanting to experience something new because the world is experiencing so much as every day goes on that, you know, there is that need to go back to, you know, what you know and revisit those old games you want to play or reconnect with those childhood free type memories. Do you know, I think there is an escapism. The question I would have is, what part is it, you know, a healthy distraction? And then what part is it a complete, like, you know, avoidance from everything? Do you know, like, because for, you know, for some people, everyone needs a distraction from their day. Everyone needs their downtime to revisit something or play a game or watch a movie.
Yeah,
but, you know,
I guess it's the thin line of, like, what becomes kind of a nice, pleasant distraction and, like, you're obsessed with this, like, you need to kind of pair it back kind of thing. Because I'll tell you myself, like, last week, just got this ad on another fucking another app for like a game called Idle Slayer. I'll put it out there. You're gonna curse me if you download it, anyone listening. It's literally just like practically like Cookie Clicker, and it's like you collect coins and you level up, and it's always like just that 5 more seconds you want to play because you want to like get
the next
coin. It's
like a fidget
coin.
Spinner kind of game.
Fidget spinner game. It's and for 2 days I was like really into it, and then they had like in-app ads and I was like, oh look, I'll pay the fiver just to get rid of the ads. And I was just like, what am I doing? And I was completely addicted, and I knew it was like just punching me and taking my lunch money just for the primordial, like, just lizard brain dopamine hit. And I was like, Sure. Ah, like screaming. And I was just like, I know you're cheating me out of just like wasting my time. Like literally, it's a nothing game. It's so surface level. And it's like, and it just hooked me like something hasn't hooked me in bloody years. Like, you know, I was just like, oh my God, this is crazy. And it was just a stupid idle cookie clicker game. Like,
yeah, but that, I mean, those games are made with the intention of being exactly what they are. They know what they are. Do you know what I mean? They know it's the same way. It's the same way, like, you know, if you look at the way, you know, the way now Instagram and YouTube have turned into TikTok.
Yes.
Do you know, like, as in, like, you, I have been on both those apps and thought I was on TikTok once. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like they have this thing where it's instant. So it's like there's no menu. There's no searching for videos, really. I mean, you can, but they're like, when you open that app up, it's there, it's instant. So whether you have 2 minutes, 5 minutes, or 5 hours, it's like, you know, it's instant on, you know, it's an instant serotonin hit. So like all that mobile platform stuff can be very much so that way, which to kind of bring maybe the conversation back into what we're talking about a little bit more. When you go back to retro gaming, there is something about doesn't have that kind of, you know, it doesn't have the microtransactions, it doesn't have the DLC, it doesn't have that, like, you want that skin now, you know, you're not going to earn it, you want to buy it, you know what I mean? There's not that kind of
anything.
Which is, you know, if you're going back to maybe sometimes why people like to revisit outside of stuff like, you know, nostalgia and what makes them feel good, you know, sometimes there's not a 5 hour fucking tutorial, you know, sometimes the gameplay is a very obvious aspect you want to go into, you know, there's not like, or it's not so cinematic. Don't get me wrong, I love cinematic games, I love The Last of Us, I love God of War, you know, all that. But I think sometimes going back to something like Mario 64, where you start off the game, Peach says something to you for 5 seconds, and then, you know, it's kind of, you know, you're all gameplay, it's all kind of a bit skill based, and you're, you know, you can feel accomplished by collecting and going with it, and there's no ulterior motive than to, you know, give you that entertainment. It's not looking for more money. It doesn't, yeah, it doesn't need a patch, it doesn't need, you know, a 5 year live service model on it. So I think there is, you know, it's not just, you know, a mental health aspect of why people like to go back to them too. Of course, you know, it's a really interesting topic to talk about. Why do we go back? Do you know what I mean? Why are we looking for that comfort blanket? But there's a multitude of reasons, I think. Do you know?
Yeah, but I'm wondering, is there sort of like, is it like a time horizon? Is it something happens? Like, I think eventually, because I'm definitely feeling it myself personally the last couple of months, especially this year in particular, it was like after the pandemic, completely burnt out. We're in lockdown for months. You know, the second round of lockdown, it was like going out like 2 or 3 days a week, not like, you know, falling home or whatever, but it was like, you know, you have a few drinks, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. You're kind of feeling like shit. Had a break at Christmas and it was as if like the veil had been lifted. It was like, oh my God, we joined a gym for the first time in like 3.5 years, got back on the wagon, didn't drink for like 2.5 months. I was like, oh my God. And then it was sort of like, oh, I don't want to sit at home anymore and like watch TV in the evening. Like, we'll go for a walk, we'll do X, Y, and Z. And it was kind of like, oh my God, I feel like I've gotten over the hill and I'm like, I don't need to look back.
Sure.
I'm actually looking forward now. It was like such a strange thing. And then it's like, oh, you know, it's like, we want to do X, Y, and Z, and, you know, end up getting like a new job and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, just kind of a shift in focus nearly. It was like a switch went off. Not that I was like depressed or anything, but it was like, it just out of nowhere, it was like a revelation, like literally, I can't even describe it, but it's like, is there something that's like holding people back by looking back is kind of the main question.
Okay. Sure, sir. So I was waiting to see what we're connecting with to what we're talking about, but I get what you're saying now. I think yes and no. So like I think it's kind of different, right? Because I think when you're talking about, I mean, it comes back to that borderline again between what you use to get a respite in your day and what gives you comfort. Like, I mean, that's perfectly okay, whether it's reading a book, whether it's watching a movie, whether it's playing a game, but it's how much, you know, of yourselves, I guess, you kind of invest into that aspect of it and how much is tied with it. I think for me, like, you know, you're talking about there, you know, coming out of COVID and, you know, you'd be still in that almost depressive state. You'd be still in that like a bit lost state, you know, and I think for me, even going into, like, it's kind of funny because I was kind of semi doing, you know, streaming, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was kind of halving my time a little bit between that and being a therapist. So I was working as an art therapist and I was working as a counselor. And I think, you know, I mean, I love working as a therapist, you know, and it's the college courses have served me well for life, being in my own therapy, you know, working through all my own demons and whatever comes up with that, you know.
Yep.
But I think, you know, and I decided, but I think what happened to me was I said, look, you know, I don't have kids just yet. You know, I am 30, you know, I am moving on a bit, but it's a case, you know, I've done 10 years of college, I've done 10 years of education. And I was like, I'd like to give this dream a try, you know, which is entertaining. I like, mm-hmm. I like having that aspect, you know, of making people smile, making people laugh. And I was like, look, let's just give this a go. And there was, look, there was a lot of resistance, obviously, from people within my life from a good place. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, it's like, you've, you know, you've done all this, you know, is this, you know, a good idea, you know, and people want to see you go on and do what you did. Do you know what I mean? Whether it's your parents, whether it's your partners, whatever it is. And it's, you know, it's kind of a risky thing to do. But I think kind of what I realized is that for me, this was a moving forward. And at the very least, you know, if we're talking about, you know, staying in a place you don't want to be or looking back or holding on to all the things that give you comfort.
Yeah.
For me, this was taking a step forward. You know, this was me kind of jumping off the cliff a bit and saying, I'll do something for me, whether people are happy with it or not. Because if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And if I try it and I don't like it, I try it and I don't like it. And I can be sure as hell. And I think that's a big thing in life. Doing things you hate in life is some of the best lessons in the world. Doing that job you hated, doing all those aspects, like I would be a big believer in, like, even if you don't think you're gonna like it, do it, because you'll find out a whole goddamn lot about what you want to do as a result of that. You know, it pushes you in a direction.
Better to not have the regrets of not doing it. It's like, it's better to know and to hate, to know and to,
yeah,
to love, or, you know, whatever that, I'm butchering it, I'll edit this out.
No, I know you're good. No, keep it in. And so, like, to go back to your point of you talking about, you know, you're kind of coming out of COVID, you were kind of drinking, you know, you were kind of filling the void, or, you know, the same way people back. And
it was,
you know,
actually just more like the pure excitement of being able to go out after, like, literally not being able to walk outside without a mask and stuff.
Couldn't sure, go anywhere, but you
for
also
like talk- 5 months, and then.
No, I get that. But you're also kind of, you're also talking about the negative aspect about it, because you're talking about the veil being lifted and the fact that, you know, you want a, you know, new job, gym, new me kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of referring to that aspect of it, because, and the point I'm going to is, like, doing what I love doing, which is this, which is, you know, doing, like, you know, being able to do a live entertainment show and, you know, build a community and have a sense of belonging where I feel I belong, because that's the thing that makes me happiest the most, is feeling like I'm part of something.
Yeah.
Feeling that I, like, have a place, you know, that I'm contributing or, you know, changing things, you know. So doing that full time, then all of a sudden for me, when you want to talk about the mental health aspect of things, I think you really got to find something if you can. It doesn't have to be your job. It can be outside your job, but, like, something that you love so much that, like, it, you know, it makes you want to wake up in an aspect, you know, it makes you want to, you know, stop going out 3 times a week or going out every weekend drinking and being hungover on a Sunday. Do you know what I mean? It's like you get something you enjoy doing so much that all of a sudden you kind of, first of all, you're not at the end of the week thinking, oh geez, I need to get pissed because what a fucking shit week every week, whatever, you know? Yeah, which I understand. I've related to it. I've done it for years. But I think, like, and it's very hard. I'm not saying for a second that's an easy thing to do. It's so hard to find a replacement for all the addictions and distractions we have in life. Because
no, it is
easy.
Hard. It goes back to what we were saying. It's like people don't know how, and it is very hard. And as I was saying, like, for myself, it took, you know, it was almost like the cork came off, like the pressure was building. And it always happens, like, towards Christmas, like before you go on a break, where, like, I either used to get the flu, used to be dying sick before Christmas.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. That it's like your go.
Physical
go.
Manifestation of the cortisone and stress that you have in your body will manifest and itself physically. So, like, you know, you can't separate body from mind.
The biggest cruelty, and I was very lucky over COVID to actually still have a job. So, you know, anyone who lost their job or anything like that, I'm not saying anything about that. But if you did have a job, you couldn't go anywhere, but you still had to work. That was like a cruel thing, because it's like I can't even enjoy not doing anything. It's like you can't go anywhere, you have no release, but you're still like working 40 hours.
You have to work with, you have all the work no play syndrome.
Yeah, so it was
like in hand.
It was basically like at Christmas, it was like I got to read a book. I read like 3 or 4 books I couldn't get to read, like fried for months. Didn't even realize how fried you are, you know. It's like, Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, wow, we can go back into the new year, like new year, new me. Because both being like just both hitting 30 in the last year, that also kind of resets like a time horizon for like a new decade. Even though like it sure. should only be like a number, but I've just mm-hmm. noticed in the zeitgeist, like a lot of people like getting houses, you know, they're getting...
Oh, yeah, getting married, engaged,
having kids. It's like, it's literally as if like, again, like a click went off.
But you see, it's less so than like even something that's in your head, but it's a very real societal pressure. Yeah, do you know what I mean? So it's like it's you know, it's usually placed by, you know, previous generation. I'm not saying for a second that like I think it's fucking brilliant to get married. I think it's brilliant to have kids. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that. But you know, there's obviously, you know, there's like when you hit that age, it's like, I think we were talking about before we started, you know, I'm in Ireland at the moment, you're in Australia, but I was talking about, you know, how, you know, the housing crisis in Ireland, we were talking about, you know, how it's nearly impossible to buy a house. Do you know, where literally there was a parody I was watching online where like, you know, a politician, an Irish politician as a joke was like, you know, sure, the best way now to buy a house is just wait till your parents are dead and take theirs. Do you know what I mean? Like there is that very,
yeah.
And that's a bit of a grim prospect. Do you know what I mean? There's stuff like that, that obviously, you know, comes out in humor that relates to life real. And that's why we find it funny. But I think that like idea of a time frame when you hit 30, and I'm sure we all thought when we were 15 that when we were 30 we probably would have had a house, three kids. Do you know
true.
What I mean? There was yeah. do you know, there was probably some aspects of, you know, that growing up. And then, but I also do think, I mean, I we're fucking going in every goddamn way a topic here, but I do think that like there is an aspect that was ingrained in your head a little bit, because you know that was what was mirrored to you. Do you know, our parents would have got married at a way younger age, would have had kids at a way younger age.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're the generation holding on 10 years later and still not doing it. Do you know what I mean? Like most of our the generation before us would have had kids early 20s, you know.
Yeah,
like
I just don't easy well, yeah, we're getting a little bit away from the topic. Let's refocus. We'll edit this part out. What are we even talking about?
Sure. started going down the mental health track and then we're over here. I don't think it's a bad thing, right? Like, as in, I know it's not focused, but it's I think it's you know, it still plays part. You were talking about how we got to here was because we were talking about nostalgia, we were talking about retro gaming, and then you were talking about why do we look back all the time, and then we were talking about by looking back how do we move forward, and then by moving forward we were talking about, you know, doing something you love that gives you kind of that energy. And then by moving forward, you were talking about time, yes, and we're okay. talking
found,
about age. And then
my
we kind of got to that.
In the storm of the tumult of the conversation yeah. here. So you decided against the well wishes of friends and family, by the sounds of it, to dive headfirst into content creation and how that affects you, that you feel like being part of a community. But you've been streaming now, and the last time we talked, Steamy Streamers was still an entity. Mm-hmm. What in particular have you seen over the years that you kind of said like, man, I love this so much? Like, what's been your favorite interaction from the community that has ultimately made you decide that you're diving headfirst into this to make sure that you give it 100%?
It really boils down to the aspect of how it makes me feel. So it's like, you know, it's almost kind of like that idea of, you know, someone finds out they walk out on stage, and I'm not exactly comparing it to that, but you know, they feel like, oh, this feels kind of like I'm actually kind of suited to this. You know, you find, yeah, and you kind of find your skills that you feel like you naturally, you know, gravitate towards based on kind of, oh, I have, you know, kind of, you know, I can captivate a certain amount of people, you know, if they're going to come there every day, you know, or I can create a space where they feel comfortable to be themselves or express themselves or have chats and have a solid boundary around that. It's never been so much about the platform. It's never really been about Twitch. I mean, there's so many things you can complain about within the work, but the reason why it's kept me there and gravitated me more and more and more is because, you know, it's that feeling that it gives you. Do you know what I mean? I know you're asking me about interactions within the community. I mean, their feedback and them being there and them hanging out, you know, gives you that sense of belonging and that sense of wanting to continue. Do you know what I mean? And you build up friendships. Like, I've had people visit from America and Amsterdam, and, you know, you actually build up so many kind of, You know what I mean? So it's like there's a lot of traveling aspects within that, and you're meeting new people all the time. And, you know, there's, you know, a lad who came down from Belfast last weekend and stayed at my house all weekend. You know what I mean? Like, as in just when we all met through streaming. So there's that community aspect of it that's hugely important. I mean, if you really want to go down a memory hill, you and me used to play Resident Evil 4, and we had a little streaming show of our own. You know, it was always in my head.
Pre-YouTube, I think, or just when YouTube started. We recorded on tapes, but I think if those tapes ever do resurface, they need to be absolutely banished. We'd be cancelled.
This is a very non-politically correct time.
when you're but like quite young, it's the things that come out of your mouth.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, we were doing stuff like that, and it's about a creative process, right? So it's about what is fulfilling in terms of, like, you can put stuff out, you can make loads of YouTube videos, you can spend hours editing, doing live content, doing a podcast, doing this, and, you know, feel like you're draining yourself and getting nothing with it if, you know, you're not getting a feedback on it, or if there's not people watching or listening, you know, and it can become. But I think it was, for me, it was focusing on one thing, putting my energies into that, and very, very slowly just building up and building up. Because I didn't start this out with a career in mind, and I don't know if it will continue to be a career in mind. You know, you take it month by month. It's enough to get me by right now. But so, you know, starting off as something I wanted to do for the laugh, then it became more of a hobby. You know, I did it with my girlfriend. You know, we started off streaming some games, and then I did it with a buddy of mine. And now, you know, it's gone through many different transitions. But what's kept me there is the feeling it gives me, being able to entertain, putting a smile on people's face, building community and friendships along the way. And to be able to get any form, to be able to live off doing something like that, that you love, it's great. Now, the hours are long. It's, you know, the shop aspect of it is, you know, you got to get yourself up. There's no sick pay. There's no holiday pay. You know, there's no healthcare. There's nothing that comes with that. Even with that, I love doing it, and it gives me a purpose. And, you know, it keeps me away from just saying, you know, like, I fucking hate my week and getting pissed and being hungover and being sad about it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. No, because it's funny, like, obviously, anyone listening, we have created the content today. I've been doing the podcast for like 5 years and kind of went through similar different cycles. But for me, it's always been like, I actually never really give away too much away about me. And it's never usually about me, because it was always like interviews. So it was,
sure.
It was always,
so it'll be interesting maybe to learn a bit more about you than as a listener, right?
Yeah, to an extent, but like, I don't think anything I have to say is particularly interesting, but I want to extract the juice from the guest, I suppose, normally, because, you know, what do I do during the day? Like, I still have the 9 to 5 X, Y, and Z. It's like, it's nothing too exciting. You know, I do different things, but I love chatting with people to extract, like, it's almost like extract entertainment from them more so than me giving the entertainment, if that makes sense. Like, I think it's a little bit opposite. And like, I don't usually receive feedback for the show. It just goes out into the ether as like, if you come across it and you like it and you know, whatever, that's great. But I don't really feed on like the community aspect as much. Like, I feel like I'm almost like the opposite. Like, you put it out there, but I like take it in.
Sure. No, I get what you're saying. It's like, as in, yeah, you're kind of a give and take scenario. I know what you mean. So it's like, you're kind of, as you said, extrapolating from me, where I'm kind of, you know, entertaining outwards, where you're kind of entertaining inwards. I know what you're saying. But what I'm curious about, I suppose, then, is like, what made you want to do this, and what made you want to continue it? I'm your guest. I'm just curious though, do you know, because if we're talking about a creative cycle and what keeps people going, I'm curious to know what, you know, has kept you going with this. Like, what do you get out of doing this?
Yeah, well, I've mentioned it a few times, and people who have been sticking through it the last 2 years have known that the episodes have been few and far between, and I will get to that very briefly. So it started off, we've mentioned the name a few times, Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil in general. And once upon a time, probably 6 years ago, we were streaming Resident Evil 1. And we said, haha, that guy's like the Fear Merchant or something. I was like, oh, that's a cool name. Set up a Twitter. We were streaming, put out the things on Twitter. And then I was following a few horror people, because we were like horror streamers at the time. And this magazine in the UK, UK Horror Scene, which is now defunct, they were looking for reviewers for movies and stuff and content. So I reached out to them. I said, you know, I'm based in Ireland, blah, blah, blah. And they said, yeah. And then there was a lot of people didn't want to review all the short movies or short stories and just independent content. They just wanted all the kind of big releases. Sure. So I was doing that for maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 months. And I was listening to a few podcasts back, you know, 6 years ago. And I was like, I can do this. You know, like I have a big pool of indie people who I'm sure want to talk about their stuff. So then it turned into like the Fear Merchants Bazaar. So it was like the Bazaar cast.
Sure. So that's because I remember, right? Just to give you a little kind of snippet in between your story, like with the Fear Merchant, like, because I remember that was like kind of the streaming name, and we used to stream on Ustream, which was the platform that existed. Yeah, I believe so. And yeah, coming up with that name with it. And I remember like having the domain and everything, you know, thinking it's like, yeah, this will take off. I'd say we ever had one person in there. But yeah, it's just interesting that name, because so was the Fear Merchant Bazaar. Is that what you were saying? Was it so kind of like, was it combined?
The Fear Merchants Bazaar. So it was basically like the Bazaar cast, the Fear Merchant podcast. Was kind of, the Bazaar, like the Fear Merchant podcast. And then I was like,
yeah, you are the Fear Merchant and the Bazaar is the name of the podcast. Yeah, is that kind of what you were aiming at?
That's how it started off, kind of. Because it used to be like the Bazaar cast, like by R.M. Martin, the Fear Merchant.
Sure.
So that was that. And then I did that for like 2 years straight. Never missed a day. Every single Thursday, I released an episode for 2 full years. Moved down to Australia. I was traveling for 7 weeks. And I had all the content like lined up. Your episode was one of them. And then I got down here and I was like, I can't keep it up. The time zones are horrendous. I found a guy who was one of the guests, Robert Christopher, in New York. Mm-hmm. And I was working nights for the first company I worked for here. So for like a real good 6 months, like we were pounding out the episodes. Like we tried to do one a week kind of thing, or once every 2 weeks. And I was really pumping like the social media, like really trying to give a good go, like going on, like we'll do review swaps, we'll do X, Y, and Z, like really pushing the podcast.
It's a lot of energy. It's a lot of energy.
To be honest, audience, I really burnt out on it. And that's massive reason like why the episodes have been like trickling in. Like I really just pick the episodes like when they suit me. Because most of the time I either have to record very late at night, or it has to be like early on a Saturday morning or at the weekend when you can catch people on a Friday lunchtime or something, if they're sure. in the US. But the reason I've been keeping it up, number one, I think it's very important to have a creative outlet, no matter how small. I keep a diary for the last 2.5 years now. I haven't missed an entry, just to do that creative writing. Very cool. And just to have a bit of a like a time capsule of just my own life if I want to flick through it. And a lot of it's just mundane, like, you know, went to the shop.
I didn't know that, though. That's very impressive to have a diary like that and actually have, you know, your thoughts down on it and not miss an entry for 2.5 years, you said, is it?
Yeah, so far. So, like, it's just very one of impressive. These, you know, the open leaf is like a full week or whatever. So it's just a couple of lines on the day. And, yeah, I just love doing it because when I catch someone and, like, we actually don't really chat too often, and it's like something like this where it's like, oh, we haven't chatted, so it's like, oh, we get to catch up. But it's also kind of interesting to like pick your brain for, like, you know, we've obviously known each other for like 20 plus years or something, so it's like a lot changes then. So you kind of, you might lock someone in as like, I thought I knew you like this, whatever, but then between like all the different guests of like, some person might have just wrote a book, some person is like, you know, like one of my favorite conversations, which is very strange how it came about, but this guy who was an extra in a show called The Blacklist, and he was like the main character's like mercenary henchman kind of guy, and I was like, oh, I fucking love him, he looks like so cool, like literally like 60-year-old man with like a gray ponytail with a gun and stuff. I was like, he looks so cool. And his name his name was Boz. And I was like, I wonder who this guy is. So I was like, his name is Basil Baz. So I was like, Basil.
His name is actually Basil Baz.
Basil Baz. So I was like, Basil Baz. And I was like, I wonder what else has he done? So, you know, I type in Basil Baz and he has this like website and he's like an ex-CIA operator. He like rescues children.
I remember that episode. Like, it was insane. That was like one of the most... I remember listening to that. That should be a four-part Netflix documentary that should be transcribed. Because what episode was it? So people can listen to it. It's insanely good. I highly recommend it.
We'll look it up there quick and we'll do a little flash edit. So this only sounds like 1 second. That was episode 71 with Basil Baz, former Marine, ex-CIA operator and rescuer of children. Episode 71. So I have a listen to that.
Yeah, that was really insane.
It was mental to actually hunt him down. But it's like, you never know what you're going to get from someone. It's like, don't judge a book by its cover. Or like, you don't know what kind of stories you're going to get out. Or like, what's people's like hidden superpower. Because I do have something I will be revealing, hopefully by the end of the year. But I won't talk about it yet. Just as a personal passion project I've been doing.
Okay, exciting. Will I get to hear about it afterwards? Yeah, you will. Make everyone jealous.
It's not. There's nothing too exciting, but no, I'll actually say it here. It's something I've been doing for the last like, year and a half, which I haven't really said it to much people, but been like donating blood every like 2 weeks or 2 weeks for plasma, 3 months for blood.
Wow.
Done like 17 donations. I was going to wait till 25 to pop the cork in it, but just something I've been quietly doing in the background is like a charitable thing, helping
that's
people.
That's insane.
So the only reason it's on,
that's phenomenal.
The only reason it's on my mind is it's you save up to 3 lives every donation. So it's like just went over like 50 people. So it's kind of been thinking about that this week in a real big way, kind of to be like, Jesus, like imagine if I saw those 50 people in a room, like what would I do? So
I know.
It's kind of like melting
first
my brain.
First of all, insanely well done. That's fucking phenomenal. And I think what that really brings to mind is, you know, kind of had a little bit of a conversation about, you know, I suppose touching on depression or anxiety or whatever, but altruism, do you know, doing something good, you know, putting something kind of back in. So doing something good for someone else, do you know, or actually, you know, helping someone or being kind or, you know, putting more focus on that. It's amazing because, look, you know, there is that joke. There's no such thing as a selfless good deed. Like, obviously, we do good things because they make us feel good in some capacity as well. Do you know what I mean? There's no harm in ever doing that. But it's amazing how much sometimes the more you do with that, the less important you realize you are, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah,
so, you know,
yeah.
A lot of times we get into our head about like every decision I make. You're almost like you feel like you're the main character of your story. So like, do I go left or right, up and down? And then you get in like...
No, it actually puts you more into like a community setting sort of thing.
100%. And you realize all of a sudden
you're part
that a lot of
the
things
the hive.
You like,
you're part of humanity.
Yeah,
you're not
a little bit. And you know, doing something good and you know, realizing that the more you do good for others, the less you place so much importance on yourself. I don't mean in a way you don't look after yourself, you don't put yourself first when you need to, but realizing that you are part of something bigger and that everything you know, overanalyze and overexert anxiety and energy on, I find that it becomes far, far less. And, you know, it's the same with like a creative process. If you're saying you're writing and you're doing your podcast and, you know, you're getting information out of people, or me, if I'm streaming, I'm getting to know people and understand people. It's an aspect that makes you feel part of something bigger, you know, and I think being creative in that aspect can work as well. But that's amazing, man. I'm fucking very, very proud of you. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, like as you say, like it the more it kind of goes on, it's like something to do every 2 weeks, you know, on a Thursday, whatever. And like I actually enjoy it because it's just personally speaking, like it's one of the only kind of charitable things like where I know the end product like can't be used in any other way. Like it can only be used medically to help people.
Interesting, yeah.
Because I did work for a charity over here for like 3 months as well. I won't mention the names because it'd be too easy to find, but it was kind of in the healthcare space. And it was like, I am just kind of getting paid to like churn the numbers. It was like, this isn't helping anyone. Like there's a full office here with like 20, 30, 40 people, 50 people. And it's like, what is this? Like, this is just a machine to kind of pay for all of you people. But it's like,
sure,
at least with blood and something, it costs nothing.
Yeah, you know, and it can't be used for anything else as far as we know anyway. And
the only thing it takes for me besides the actual blood is like my time. So it's like, you know, you get to sit down, just chill out in the chair, and then, you know, just like spend time for yourself. Like, it's almost like meditation at this stage. So yeah, it's just something I decided a couple of years ago. My cousin lives down here and he does it a bit regularly. And I was like, oh, I never did it in Ireland, because I think in Ireland there's like a weird taboo that you'll get like hepatitis, even though that was like in the 80s. But yeah, no, it's something I've been doing, but don't pay too much attention to me eating it. I wasn't even going to mention it. But I did.
I won't. No, you're fine. I'm going to be totally honest with you. It's like, I think you're missing the point of the fact that we're relating to the conversation. You were talking about doing things for other people, but you know, in terms of this all relates to things that, you know, you do in your life. So like, that's just something I was asking, because you're talking about your creative writing, you're talking about why you do your podcast. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, you do this thing, you know, every so often that, you know, helps other people, but also is something that's good for you and makes you feel good about yourself. It's all part and important information for people to hear that, you know, that might inspire them to do something else. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's fine to leave it in.
Yeah, because I was going to mention just like at 25, like not like, oh, this is my first donation, like everyone should do it. It's like, no, I've actually done this for like 2 years or blah, 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 you know, like just to have it. A 25 number, like a nice kind of, like, because it would take so long to get to 100, it would be like another 2 or 3 years, 4 years.
But I suppose in terms of the, yeah, go on.
No, that's it.
So like, why? So the actual creative aspect of the podcast, though, like, what do you get out of it? Is it like, as you said, hearing something from other people? You can keep this in or not. I don't really mind. Yeah, whatever you want to edit with.
It's genuinely just like, I like getting things out of people, and like, you know. There is like a hit list of people like I'd love to talk to, but you know, everyone under the sun has either like extracted every nugget of information that it would be absolutely redundant for me to even chat with them. Also to a point, like they'd be very hard to like access. Because like you'd have to go through like agents and speaking with other people who have produced documentaries and stuff, who I'd be friendly with offline. They've said like they've had to pay, you know, big bucks to interview people, so which is like an aspect like I haven't ever come across. But we did have one interview before, and I say a week, so it was during the Robert Christopher times, and there wasn't that many interviews, so you can probably guess maybe who the guest was, but they had like their agent on, like literally muted in the background. And it was like as if there was like some demon over his shoulder, like he
the anxiety of just like,
and it was just really awkward. And like we kind of said a few questions, like it wasn't like how much money did you make, but it was like, oh, like with the money aspect, like something mentioned money, and she just goes off mute and was like, "Wee," and I was like, "What the hell?" Like you were meant to be muted in the background, like kind of like crazy stuff like that. Like the lesson I would learn from then was like, never have anyone but the person on the call. Cause like,
well, these are almost kind of like in their own ways, right? Like I'm not in a therapeutic sense, but I mean, you kind of create that role of where it's like in therapy where you have this space, you know, you try and make people feel comfortable, you know, you're not trying to infer any information onto them, but you know, you're just trying to get them to talk about their lives and kind of what's going on and what they enjoy doing. So having that like, you know, omnipresent extra person staring at you really like ruins that safe space vibe for both of you.
I've never done, and I never will, do like a gotcha podcast, or like I never load anything to be like, oh well, back in 1987 I heard that you did this, like what are your thoughts, you know, because I did have someone else,
it's like we saw you taking a child out of a candy store 20 years ago kind of thing.
No, because like, yeah. I actually did have someone else that I mentioned like, oh, x, y, and z happened and you sort of took a stand, and they were like, oh yeah, that like happened, that was something that did happen or whatever. And then after the fact, they're like, actually, do you mind editing that out? And I've had it a few times where I've had to edit things out by request because it's like, no, we can't.
Which is fair enough because you know, sometimes people feel, I think this happens a lot, and it happens a lot in like therapy side of things as well.
But this is why this isn't live, like, either, because if this was live, we're just like, we say something and it's like, oh, Jesus, roll that back. I was like, well, it's out there now and people will take it out of context. And, you know, I'm a micro influencer. And
I mean, there is interesting thing about this, because I know you'll probably want to edit different aspects of this podcast, but I mean, I could also implore you to say probably don't, and just, you can have it as a free-running like, kind of conversation episode.
I don't normally edit much out. Like, first off, now,
yeah,
like
just maybe something that's episode, pausing or whatever.
Just a pause. Like, it isn't a big production.
No, I know, but sometimes I think it's interesting when you get the flow of, you know, because in this case, like, obviously, like, I'm guesting on here because you don't have a co-host, but, you know, we've been friends for 20 odd years. So, like, you know, sometimes it's interesting to see where, because I think people are interested sometimes to see where conversation between people have known each other for so long go. Do you know, like, how does one thing branch from another? So I think sometimes the changing topics, because so far, you know, if I was to kind of reel it into a theme, it's like, you know, we're obviously talking about the aspect because I'm coming as a guest and we're talking about, you know, I do a little bit of streaming. I do, you know, have a new podcast and talking about retro games a little bit. But it very quickly went into, like, you know, nostalgia, turning back into mental health and the creative process. So I think that's the part, you know, we're on that's interesting, is the creative process. Mm. And, you know, what you do in your life that, you know, helps with that and how important it is, do you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, it's... Yeah, I think I just love chatting with people, really. Like, as I was just kind of saying, like, it's kind of like you need to get that, like, nice mid-level. I kind of have, like, a little bit of an inroads with the kind of game dev community at the moment. Need to massage a few more angles.
You've had a few known names on.
Yeah, no, I have. And I don't like to plug other shows while we're chatting here, like, because people can go back and see. But yeah, there's been a few, like, developers and CEOs and kind of industry legends and a few YouTubers and everything. And those are people who, like, I watch, I consume their content, I play their games, that it was very interesting for me to chat with them. And I think that's something that could be pursued more for me, because I don't ever create content for an audience per se, because number one, I don't get too much feedback, but I think people just enjoy when there is content for the little feedback that there is. Because a lot of people would listen for me. Some would listen for, like, oh, you had a string of X, Y, and Z people on. So I listened for them. But, you know, then you had someone else on.
And I know from my own point of view and a lot of our friends, a lot of people who listen to maintain a connection. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, you're in another part of the world. So, you know, hearing something that you're creatively putting out is also a way for, you know, us in our heads to maintain a form of connection there too. Do you know what I mean? To kind of hear you kind of, you know, do your work and have an aspect too. So, I mean, there's that as well, do you know?
Yeah,
there's
definitely
people who want to listen to the content. There's people who want to feel, you know, a sense of closeness to maintain that, you know, kind of, you know, you're hearing the person's voice. Do you know what I mean? So for some people, it's that too.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I would say it's the same. But you were saying, like, you feel like it's going out on stage and you love that there's a crowd. But for me, I'd say I'm like Shrek in the swamp being like, fuck off.
I mean, look, the interesting thing about what I do is that, like, you know, very much my aim and goal is, like, if I can bring some levity to people's day, it's important. There is, like, you know, there's a balance. I love, sometimes we'll have a 2-hour proper conversation about some aspect of mental health and people will be really honest and open. I do remind them it's a public platform, and, you know, you do try and create a boundaries where just say what you feel, don't give too much details, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So everyone's safe with it. But I mean, you know, I don't consider anything I've done a waste of time, whether it's been, you know, doing psychology or art therapy or working in retail for 5 years and meeting people face to face all the time. Every single one of those skills, whether I love doing or hating them, compile into this creative outlet I have now, where, you know, where I get to chat to people and I get to have conversations or I get to entertain. There is a kind of a, you know, when you're doing the stream, there is a bit of a flick mode between having a laugh. You know, you generally start off with some form of a kind of a mask of entertainment to ease you into it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like starting off any show where you go, hello, I'm Richard here and welcome on into the Bizarre Cast. Today we have, you know, there is that kind of initial kind of, you know, greasing the wheels to get you on in there.
We're definitely not talking in our off mic cadence. Like, there's definitely like, ho ho, like, it's the show voice, like radio voice.
Yeah.
It's it's hard to kind of think and talk like succinctly. That would be a lot of what I would edit out, would be like ums and ahs and hesitations, you know, so it's, we sound better than we are. That's usually what
I do. Sure. But question then for you, right? Let's say, is that very, very time consuming, and does that ruin some of the fun?
I actually think that's some of the best parts, because it's like you're kind of spending time and it's like, I want it to be the best version. Not like the best version, but it's like, it's almost like the second half of doing the podcast is like, you're kind of crafting it. Well, not crafting it, but it's like, you're doing its makeup, I would say.
Sure, yeah, you're perfecting it a bit, and you get satisfaction out of kind of making it a bit more pristine and shining it up a bit more.
Yeah, because, you know, like, put in like an intro, disclaimer, there's a little bit of music, there's the outro.
And you're hearing it come together.
And it's like, sometimes when we have a chat and it sounds great when you're chatting back and forth because you don't listen to what you're saying. But sometimes it would be, some guests would have, they might have like a tick or like they click their teeth and it's quite a lot. But it's like,
I do a thing where I go like, like a lot on the stream because I get such like sinus issues.
Exactly. So it's like, oh, look, just for the sake of the listener, it's like, boom, 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 take it out silently. Mm-hmm. And it just sounds like it's night and day sometimes, because someone who was very bad before, I actually took all the kind of ums and ahs and I put them in a separate track. I was doing that for a while, for like the first like 10 episodes or something. And it was like, you know, 30, 40 seconds of um. So it's like, it's actually a lot in that needs to be taken out to give a better experience. Mm-hmm. And it's really like subconscious thing. It just makes for like a crisper experience.
The reason I ask is because, like, talking about, you know, making sure it's enjoyable for you, because you're talking about burnout, and I'm curious about that as well, on like my take and your take on it. But
yeah,
like, you know, there's things you do sometimes that like add to your creative enjoyment of the project, and there's things you do sometimes that detract from it to make, you know, what you think is better. In your case, you're saying it's not. I just thought maybe it was one of those things that the effort and burnout of it.
Sometimes it does add to the effort, but seeing as I don't have a tight turnaround anymore, it's like, I'll actually put it out there now. So we are recording on the 28th of June. Let's see how long it takes for this to be edited down. And maybe I'll put myself under a timer because I've actually put it out there. But for the last episode, it was like, I gave myself 2 weeks to do it.
If I gave you a challenge that you just put your intro and outro on it and just slap it on up there and leave people hear the raw unedited nonsense we speak?
I could do that too. Yeah.
But I'm not saying to do it, but it would be interesting.
But there's just a few kind of things, like, you know, pauses, blah, blah, blah. And that's grand. But yeah, part of definitely the burnout before was on the topic of burnout and stuff. It was like, I've put in the effort, you know, just because you're saying like you're kind of starting the journey of putting yourself in head first, and kind of someone on a micro level who's like, I feel like I did it, and to the same extent, like I wouldn't do it again. Of just like, it was churn, to the point like it was like affecting, you know, my relationship practically, because like, oh, I gotta get up on Saturday and it'll only be an hour, and it's like I'm doing the podcast and for like 3 hours because it needed like an hour of preamble, X, Y, and Z.
Sure.
And it was like, we said that we were going out to the beach or blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, really sorry. And, you know, stuff like that. And it's like,
yeah, I've had a bit of that too.
I just had to sort of say, like, why am I doing this? It's like, you're almost doing it for like the co-host at that stage. And it's like, but who the hell is this guy who, you know, I've never seen his face. Like, it's only on the mic. And it's like, I actually have a relationship at home that needs to be like fostered and looked after, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And you find out often enough that when you kind of like don't, it actually affects your work anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like it all contributes. Mind, like
you're thinking about it the whole time. I need to edit
everything contributes to it.
So in that,
you really have to have like a very high self-awareness to like, I don't think you can entirely avoid it anyway, but you know, there's so many different factors to it.
Yeah. So what about yourself? Have you experienced the burnout in the last couple of years?
I mean,
that you needed to take like a full step back and a break, maybe?
I have been always very careful, and this is only just because of, you know, I've done so much of my own inward work going through all the college years and all the fucking panic attacks and breakdowns and God knows what else. So I'm very probably attuned to knowing when I'm starting to feel overwhelmed by something or when something stops becoming fun. So I feel that semi-regularly, and then I try and address it when it starts to happen proactively rather than reactively, if you know what I mean. Like simple examples of it is like I love the streaming. Like, so my day, I'll get up right and I'll be up at 9. I might, you know, try and do a little bit of fucking a go for a walk or something, or just do any tiny form of exercise I can, just so at least my body's moving when I know I'm sitting down for so much of the goddamn day. But then I'll go over, so I don't, I have an apartment, but I don't stream there. So all the work I do, I go back to my folks' house because I'm loud. I scream like I couldn't do it in an apartment. So, you know, I have a desk set up here with my monitors and my consoles and stuff like that. But before that, like, I'll be cooking, I'll be coming up with titles for the stream, do you know, something that's stupid. I'll be thinking of kind of like tabloid headline stuff, do you know, as a kind of a an interest for people. And then you have your, and then kind of your go live notification. Stuff that isn't untrue. Do you know, it's not clickbait for the sake of it, but it's a funny, catchy title. And then it'll be a case of editing videos. So I'll take my clips, I'll start downloading them, I'll try and create something out of that, you know, because, but the part I hate and the part that is the part I dislike and the part that kind of takes away from the creative process that I enjoy, that kind of fuels a bit of the burnout, is a lot of the social media aspect of it. So, you know, your Twitter, your Instagram, your TikTok, your, you know, not Discord so much. Discord is kind of a nice place, you know, to chat and communicate. But anything that doesn't really kind of have that one-to-one. I love the editing of the video, but like putting it up and spending more time hashtagging it and figuring out what works and doesn't work because the algorithm or even been shadow banned or they've gotten rid of certain hash, you know, all that stuff is like, you know, that's the paperwork side of things that really brings a dampener on it. Another part of it is probably, and I really had to pull myself aside on this, like when I was doing it part-time, I was actually getting more slack from what you were talking about, which was, you know, we should, like, this is our time to spend today. And you're like, oh, I'm supposed to be streaming today, you know, or whatever that kind of comes with it. I found I got a lot more of that when I wasn't fully committed to it.
Right.
Because I think people saw it as like, well, you can do your hobby anytime, you know, and you know what I mean? And it would kind of get in the way. Where I feel like now that I'm kind of saying, look, I'm doing, you know, an 11 to 8 job every day. You know, this is my time. You know, that is the work time. And I think having a different space to do it in, you know, leaving the apartment where me and my girlfriend live and coming over here, you know, and having my own space to do it is really important. Stuff like that helped a lot with maintaining relationships and maintaining burnout, but also knowing, you know, as I said, what I don't like doing, what I do enjoy doing. Sometimes switching a game is huge. I'm playing a game and I'm not enjoying it and I'm forcing myself through it because it's popular, in inverted commas, you know, to try and gain some traction. And I realize, look, if I'm not radiating joy that I'm enjoying it, and you know, particularly if it's a quiet day, because you get your days, man, where you'll have like 50% of your audience compared to normal. And, you know, you can't help but look at numbers when you're trying to do it as a career and you're trying to make money. If some people say turn it off, I like to have them on because if I see an influx of people coming in, I can kind of reintroduce myself. It's all information to me that I can use to get better. Some people, it weighs on their brain too heavily if they see their numbers consistently decline. And that can be a factor of burnout. You know, if you're having the quieter days and you feel like there's not people receiving your content that you feel you're putting your effort into. But for the most part, like, as in, I consider myself extremely lucky with the community I have, that they enjoy their time there, that, you know, I think of it like a community center. Do you know, I open up the doors and hold the space where people are happy enough to be there and want to contribute and want to keep the place open and keep me alive, you know, true. Because the way you make money through Twitch is bits and subs and donos. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, you are reliant on your community to keep the stream going well, assuming they enjoy it. I see it like kind of almost like in the art sector. You know, someone makes a painting, someone could say, I see that for a fiver, I see it for 200 quid. You know what I mean? You know, they kind of place their value and importance on it based of, you know, what they have, you know, in their lives too. And all it takes to me is for one bad month to really be like, you know, I can't do this. You know, all it takes is that. So it's always a day-to-day experience.
The flip side to that then would be, you know, obviously you're diving in full time and it's not all about the monetary aspect, but it would be nice And that comes obviously with growth and I suppose increased volume. So what is your strategy as a content creator in creating the content, number one, as we've discussed, mm-hmm. but then how do you go about like the business aspect of like, all right, we need to grow this if it's going to continue, but also not to alienate, I suppose, your current audience that you're like, oh, get on the Patreon, here's the donation link, here's the PayPal, here's, you know, sure. my PO box for the bags of cash, here's my bank details, you know.
No, it's a good question. For me, it's been, I had to figure that out because like I had to learn about, you know, what's the right way and the wrong way of doing things. I would watch my videos back and see how I feel receiving me. Do you know what I mean? I like, you know, like what feelings am I inferring onto people? But the biggest way I found out, and the number one one, is being completely transparent. And it's like, do you know, because it's like having a busker without a bag in front of him.
Mm.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And it's a case of like, you know, some people come along and, you know, everything helps, you know, having people lurking, watching, viewing, chatting, you know, on Twitch, you know, the more people you have in a stream, the higher you're up in that list on that category. Do you know what I mean? So for me, being completely transparent, like, you know, if someone gives me a donation, I'd be like, thank you so much. Like, and obviously I genuinely mean it. Yeah. I'm like, you are putting food on the plate. You're keeping the place going. And, you know, you're allowing, you know, me to achieve my dreams and continue what I'm doing, while also allowing everyone here who enjoys it and who wants to hang out, you know, have that too and have a space for them to go. And that's why I think of it like a bit of a community center sometimes. You know what I mean? You're kind of keeping the influx of people who want to donate to the entertainment you're doing. And at the, it is a job. You're entertaining. You're putting blood, sweat, and tears. You know, I'm singing guitar. I'm doing karaoke. And there's also incentives for stuff too. So like if we hit an extra amount of subs in a week, we do an extra day. Do you know what I mean? Or if it's a case of like, you know, every 5 gift subs, you can pick a karaoke song and I'll sing it. So, you know, so there's, you know, you'll work hard for your money. Your voice will be gone by the end of the week. But it's just by their generosity and grace that I'm able to do what I love doing and that they enjoy it so much that they're happy to do that. I always say put yourself first with it, but that's more the business side of it, you know. I've just been, I think being transparent and being honest and being as authentic you can, that, you know, you're attempting to do this full time. And, you know, by having that metaphorical, you know, guitar bag on the floor to say, you know, that this is, you know, also, you know, this is to kind of keep me going kind of thing is important. And I don't think there's any issue with that because a lot of people get a bit ick when they talk about the money side of things.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the end of the day, the reality is, you know, if you're very transparent saying that, like, you're not asking for subs ever, you know, you're never making anyone comfortable. Like, you're delighted if someone's just there watching because that helps too. But, you know, but you also be transparent about, you know, that this is what you're trying to do. And, you know, you appreciate what you get. And, you know, you see some of the toxic things where it's like, you know, everyone's seen those videos. It's like, why aren't you fucking subbing to me? You know, there's all that cringe stuff too. But, yeah.
Yeah, because that's the thing, you know, that you just touched on there, where some people, there's like, you, like, owe me this money, or like, I need a certain amount, that like, people will be kind of getting angry. But it's like, no, you're actually, by the good grace of people, even if you get $1, like, that should be enough. Because with the podcast for like 5 years, it was kind of that burnout era where we were actually really like pushing for it to get a bit of traction so it could earn money, mm-hmm. Which it never did.
How do you earn money on a podcast though? I genuinely don't understand, because at least with Twitch, it's an inbuilt feature. So like, it would be nice if like on Spotify, there was like, why couldn't it be like, did you enjoy this podcast? Do you want to give €2? No, do you know what I mean? I think there is
donation and subscription options, kind of like a Patreon kind of thing. A lot of people I've seen do Patreon would be the easiest, or they might put up a PayPal link or Anchor now in US, like you get ads in, and other things like Podbean do ads, but you have to pay for, it's like you have to pay for the ability to
have
like
the option
ads.
Of the pay, yeah, which is killer. Like.
And that would end up being like, you have to pay for the hosting and then pay for like the ad program. So it's like, you know, €30 a month, where it's like the, unless you're in the top like 1% or something, like you're not really getting sponsors or anything like that. And so that's like another part, just to go back with like the content creation. It's like, I completely see no money in the future of this podcast. So It's really like, I'll just release it when I want. And if people are still like subscribed and they see it in their feed and they're like, oh, he's still going. Because I've never put like an end date if it's like, I think the longest it went was like 7 months or something.
And sorry to interrupt you while it's in my head, but I think that's where burnout comes from. It's when expectations don't meet reality.
Yeah.
So I think when there's like, you're putting in all this work and your expectations don't meet your reality.
Yeah, exactly.
And then often when you bring your expectations back down to where your reality is, all of a sudden it becomes fun again, you know. Or if you're saying you're doing this for fun, or you're doing it for a hobby, or you're doing it as a job, and becoming realistic with yourself. Like I was very carefully, like as I said, with, you know, knowing, like I started with 1 hour a week, you know, and it didn't move up till more until I felt like that, you know, that quote of people coming in, you know, was, you know, okay to do more. Do you know what I mean? I didn't start out doing 12 hours a day, burning the shit out of myself. And then, because I see so many people do that. So like, I want to start stream 8 hours a day. And like, why do I have, you know, 10 people in there? It's so like, you just started.
What's your advice so for start to where you're at?
There is no advice that suits everyone. There's no one size fits all model. I think obviously no one can start it as a job unless you're bloody already famous. Do you know what I mean? Some people become partner in 6 months. Some people never do. Some people who aren't partner make more money than partners. There's no like one size fits all in it. And a partner is just, you know, a verified tick on Twitch or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know. For me, it's like go in and do and make sure you're enjoying it all the way through. And, you know, do the hours you want to do. But if you're thinking of doing it from a monetary point of view, think of it like a vocation, like, you know what I mean? Even if you're on like, you know, 400 subs a month or whatever and everything else, you're still making like minimum wage part-time job for your month. Do you know what I mean? You gotta really, you know, set your expectations of what you're working with it. And you know, I think meet your expectations where your reality are. Expect to start out with nothing. Be appreciative if one person comes to watch. Because, you know, at the end of the day, that should be your focus. It should be that one person that's there. And I would always say, always like put your best foot forward in terms of, even if there's no one watching, pretend like there's 100 people watching, you know, because that's when someone stops by, then they'll be engaged by it. But if you wait for that first person to chat, do you know what I mean? It's like you always want to be kind of on in that, but do it because you enjoy it and take it one step at a time and make sure your expectations meet your reality. And your reality starting out should be that no one's going to come and watch me, but I'll do it because I enjoy doing it. And if someone comes in, brilliant. Do you know?
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny because it's like both physically and I suppose philosophically we're antipodal in how we look at sort of like work and to enjoy something. Because for me, I'm just like an absolute mercenary of just like, I'll do a 9-to-5 that will pay for my life outside of the 9-to-5. And it doesn't matter whether I like the 9-to-5 as long as like I think I'm getting paid enough for my time. But it's like,
sure,
for you, as you're saying, you're like, you'd prefer to enjoy the time that you're working. But I would see it
even
as
if it
like,
means I'm not getting paid just, that much for it.
Yeah, but it's like I would prefer to just like have the time outside of work and not worry about work. Like I'm very good at like compartmentalizing work. Like the laptop goes down at 5 o'clock. I don't do it a minute overtime. And that's like as a rule, because the second you let that door open, it's you're never.
People take advantage of it. Like, have you, like, there's very few companies in the world that when you do the extra work, all that happens is you will get extra work.
Yeah, exactly. And
do you know what I mean? Like, then you become the person who's like, oh, they'll do it for nothing. Do you know? So you like, have to be very good. Boundaries are so important.
Shit is your thanks.
And boundaries are so important with that, though.
The best pay increase is your next job, not your next title.
Sure.
So it's
very quickly, just to, you were talking about COVID and people losing their jobs, and you were saying, you know, you were doing worse. Like, I had a therapy practice over COVID in between trying to work with certain companies and things and getting paid late and paying my rent and all that. Like, I realized even if I was like the only good benefit, obviously, is streaming with the pros and cons and being a content creator, which is a hard thing to do anyway, and you have to work your ass off at it, is like, at least, you know, every profit I get, I'm not putting it back into rent. I'm not putting it back into materials. I'm not putting it back into insurance. I'm not putting it back into my own therapy and supervision. So you keep that in mind. Like, you know, even if I was making, you know, X amount of money with therapy, like in Ireland, it's terribly funded government or mental health and physical health in Ireland. I think most people know the budget for things are awful. So no one can afford to do it or get subsidized for it. So it's like, even if I had so many clients a week, I have to pay for my own therapy weekly. I have to pay for supervision about those clients every month. I have to pay for art materials every week. I have to pay for the rent of the place every month. You know, the petrol coming and going there every god. You know what I mean? It adds up so quickly.
Yeah.
Do you know, I know you can take away tax and everything else that, like, you know, I still found out that, like, fair enough, like, you would be making more money there, but by all said and done, you know,
yeah, like the net,
it's coming out with the same income. Thing. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was, you know, partially the decision of wanting to do it and enjoying it. And like, if I enjoy this more, and there was a lot of anxiety around doing therapy in its own ways too, even though I still do a bit of it. Do you know, it's stressful.
No, life is stressful.
And I probably, and I, you know, you probably get, hopefully if we're lucky enough, get one long enough go around, and I can't take the money to the grave with me. So where I am in my life right now, you know, this is something that I love doing. It's something I get a lot out of, and, you know, yeah, gives me a sense of purpose.
Yeah, I've come up with the title for the episode now. It came to me in a vision there.
What is it? Yeah.
The mercenary and the artist. Perfect.
I like it. Coming from two different points of view. But I mean, yeah, for sure.
Okay, is there anything else that we need to touch on?
No, I mean, you know what I would say though, I'd like genuinely, like, I would like to add to it, like, anything I say, like, you know what I mean, because you were asking me, like, you know, what advice would you give to starting off, or what's your opinion on this, like, very much so, like, that is just my experience of something that tends to be very different for everyone. So anything I say, you know, take with a pinch of salt. You know, our discussion is between kind of, you know, two of our heads of what we kind of feel things is, and even our, you know, opinions, you know, between kind of creative processes and how we like to work and how much we like to put into something varies hugely. So, you know, as I said, just because I think a certain way doesn't mean it's the right way for anyone else. Do you know what I mean? So I think stuff like that, when you're talking about starting something up or what's right for you, I think as long as it feels good and your expectations / reality are kind of there, I think that's the main thing.
No, I think that's a very good advice to end on there, Mr. O'Donovan. Been a pleasure. I have 40 winks to catch very soon, so I need to start wrapping up, but it's been a pleasure, sure, to have you on. I'll have you on before the next 4 years for sure.
Do I would like that, hopefully. Hey, look, do you know, if you enjoy it, make sure you leave some good feedback for Mr. Bizarre himself, and you know, if you got any questions or anything like that, or if anyone has any notes on it, I would love to hear, because since I've been the guest today and a part of the conversation, I'd love to hear what people think, and I'd love to hear what people's creative process is, and I'd love to hear, you know, I don't know if anyone has any thoughts from it. So I would like to read that, if that's okay.
Well, before we press any button to continue, Keith, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitch, steamy_streamers. I'm live on Mondays to Thursdays at 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. Irish time, sometimes Sundays. Or you can find me and Nisha, our very new retro gaming podcast, entitled Press Any Button to Continue. Or you can find me on socials, Steamy Streamers, TikTok, Twitter. And Nisha is Retro Gamer Ireland on Instagram and some other socials as well. So if you want to give that a listen, let us know what you think. I would be very much so appreciated. And Richard, thank you so much for having me on. I had a blast. It was good to catch up and talk shite. I think we went in 90 different topics, and I think that's the way a good conversation goes.
It was a nice spider's web of ideas. And if people can get back to the middle, you let us know what conclusions you came to. But all those links will be in the show notes. For me, it's been Richard. Find me at The Bizarre Caster, at The Fear Merchant. Any feedback to thebizarrecast@gmail.com. And we shall see you all in the next episode. Stay safe, everyone.
End of line.